horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, hour two. And as KC reaches for Willie, I want to again remind everybody the Belmont Pimlico Challenge. You got to sign up by 5 o'clock, so you've got 7 hours. $300, $175 to the bankroll, $125 to the prize pool, and all cash today, tomorrow. But minimum of 4 races bet at Belmont, 3 races only at Pimlico. You can only bet on 3 Pimlico races. You got to bet $25 a race minimum, and there it is, Belmont Pimlico Challenge. This is for Naira Bets customers, and sign up by 5 o'clock. Willie Martinez joins us. Word circulated this morning, Marty McGee letting the community know about the passing of Angel Montano at 81, and Angel 60 years on the scene in Kentucky, came to America as a jock and got hurt and never actually got to ride, and shifted his focus to horsemanship, and had a wonderful career and raised a wonderful family, and they're pretty well beloved around Louisville and throughout the circuit. Willie, I appreciate you visiting.
How are you, Steve? It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I thought of you right away because I knew you rode with him a lot.
Yeah, this is very sad news, and I send my love, my condolence to his family, and I just, you know, what can you say about Angel Montano? He was a great horseman, a great person, great family man. And his whole family became like, you know, a second family to me throughout the years in Kentucky. And he was part of, big part of my success in Kentucky. And Angel did a great job with whatever he had. And he was a pioneer for the, pioneer to me, in my eyes, for Spanish Latin trainers trying to break in into the Kentucky circuit. And Angel, I think, to me, it was one of the ones that opened up the doors for that, you know, for the Latin trainers to come in and be successful. But he really did a heck of a job. What can I say? I mean, I'm almost speechless. I knew he was, you know, having trouble with his health in the past few years or so, and but he was a tough man, great man. And one quote I remember, he told me once, and I never forget, don't believe so much in luck. Believe more in hard work. Hard work is what turns into luck. And in other words, you go out there and get it. You work hard and you make your own luck. And he was very right about that. I still, it's, you know, it always stays in my head. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful to have the opportunity to get to meet a great man and real winners for him.
And, you know, one thing that is a certain harmony, the fact that you rode the one graded stake win of his career, and that was Gold Seeker Bud at a big price, and that came in the Churchill Downs handicap. You beat Gopher Gin that day, and Level Sands, and Waldboro was in that field. Honor the Hero was in there. This was a good group, and you did it the way you would expect Willie Martinez to win on the front end.
Yes, I remember that day like it was yesterday. That's one of my favorite pictures on my wall. Gold Seeker, but you can never tell how good he would have been because his career was cut short due to, you know, issues that he had physically. You know, that the talent, it was always there. We knew the horse really well, and we did a lot of great things. And back in those days, you know, we were trying to kind of change saddle towels tactics in the morning. So stay away from everybody. Don't get the license plates, if you know what I mean. And Angel would do these crazy things and all. And I'm like, okay, now I see when you look back. He was so sharp and so intelligent. He knew what he had. going in every race. And that horse, it was a testament of what he could have done with the better quality of horses. And this horse, the day he showed up, I believe it was Derby Day when he beat the previous Derby winner, right? On Gold for Jim.
Yeah.
I never forget because Gold for Jim in that Derby, it was my very first Derby when I rode. So the next year, I didn't get to beat him in the Derby. I beat him that day with Gold for Jim, Gold Seeker Buck, sorry. And he, it was a big thrill. That, like I said, I could never tell. To me, in my honest opinion, I think that is the best horse that Angel Montano had ever trained in my eyes, because he never had the opportunity to see the best of that horse because his career was cut short. But it was fun and it was great memories.
Well, and you didn't ride him every start. I think he maybe. Six starts, I think, in a career. It was his last race. It was also Gopher Jin's last race, as it happens.
Yes.
They both came out of it wrong. And this, he was 20-1 that day, and I think he was 20-1 when you broke his maiden on him.
Yeah. Well, actually, when he broke his maiden, I happened to be out of town at Arlington. And we put a very close friend of mine, Jose Martinez. He used to ride, great rider himself. And for some reason, I was committed to go to Arlington. And I was like, man, I'm going to miss the opportunity to ride this horse. Anyway, I think he broke from the outside pose. And Jose kept asking me, what about the outside pose? Is that going to be a factor? And I was like, if he breaks out of the 20 hole, he's still going to win the race. That's how good that horse was. And I think he paid a big price, like $30-some or something. And I was so happy for Angel and all that because it was a lot of work, like I said, to get the horse to that point. And imagine just to get him to win a great stake. So it was a big project, but it was awesome times. Like I say, it was great memories, nothing but great memories.
Unbelievable, and you know, this was a. I think he was like a $5,000 horse, and it was only beaten once in six career starts. Oh yeah, I do see Jose Martinez in that first start. He was 23-1 in that debut. Well, and you know, I thought it was also notable. I mean that you know the circuit, you know, whether it was at Turfway and at Ellis, you know, wherever he went, and he was successful.
Yeah.
You bring up a great point about the quality of horse, and if he had gotten a chance with, you know, premium stock, he's already kind of a legend in the community. If people had, you know, gotten him, you know, really good quality horses, he would have excelled as well.
Yeah, no, Steve, no doubt. I mean, he was a man that, a true horseman, that he would show up every day to do his work. And he was a guy that he became a mentor to me when I first got to Kentucky. Like I said, when I first arrived there, he gave me a great helping hand. And he would always be on me. You know, when you're young, you think you're in indestructible, like we said, and but he would always say, just, you know, work hard and make your own luck happen, you know, make your own luck with hard work. And Angel would show up every day, and he just loved to be around horses. He was a definition of a true horseman, top and bottom, you know.
Willie Martinez joining us to appreciate Angel Montano, who passed last night in Louisville at 81, and good guidance because, Willie, you've won 3,500 races and counting from that start, and including last night at Presque Isle. Everything good otherwise for you? We haven't talked.
Yeah, man, life is great. I mean, I recently became a father, well, last November, and me and my wife was trying to, you know, keep our little family together, and I have three stepdaughters that are awesome, and a wonderful partner behind me. So I couldn't ask for better timing in my life right now at this moment, so I'm blessed. Yeah.
Well, I even under these circumstances, you know, with this sad news, I'm always pleased to be able to call you and hear your voice and watch you in the evenings at Presque Isle. In fact, looking ahead to early next week in the Presque Isle debutante, Cassandra Weaver's got you on Sennebec Summer, the steak coming up on Monday, and Willie. I appreciate it. Stay safe and healthy, and see you somewhere along the lines, maybe Tampa this winter.
Yeah, yeah, man. I'm looking forward. You know, I love you to death. We have to catch up. You've been one of my biggest fans and also a great friend, so I appreciate all you do. And you know, it was a pleasure to meet up with you today on the show, unfortunately under the circumstances, but it's good to let everybody know what a great man and great horseman this man was, and hopefully he won't be forgotten. He will not be forgotten by me, because he did so much for me. But I think he stands out of his achievement in racing, his success, you know.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. Wilfredo Martinez, Willie, I'll see you soon. I appreciate this.
All right, man. And brothers, much love for you. You know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Same back. And Willie Martinez, when we got started with our stable, and Willie rode for Chuck Simon and the DT team, and got to know him then. And I just think the world of him. Willie Martinez. Thank you, buddy.
You got it, brother. Thank you. Have a good day, Steve.
We'll be watching tonight next When they come back Monday, Monday or Sunday, 1, 2, 3, 4th on Monday at Presque Isle, so including that steak. So I didn't want Montano's passing to, you know, to slip through the cracks. Marty McGee probably when we talk next week as well, Marty covered Angel for long stretch, so we'll get some thoughts from him. And I also am reaching out to Pat Ford. Pat Ford had a little multi-horse claiming stable with Montano, and I'm sure Pat will write something nice as well. Marcus Hirsch standing by from the Daily Racing Forum. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
There's a lot to discuss, and I want your take on Enable tomorrow as the ARC takes center stage, soggy center stage. But also we should mention, I haven't brought it up yet, Hawthorne kicking off the season.
Hawthorne. It's today, Friday? Yeah, today is Friday. Opening day is today for Hawthorne. They don't have any money to give away, but the field size is pretty good. They have a decent amount of horses there, and everyone is breathlessly waiting for the arrival of the Hawthorne Casino, which it's going to be beneficial. That best case scenario, that opens end of 2021, and then that will provide some much needed purse help, because it can get much worse than it is now and has been, and still survive. They're not giving away much money now, 100 or 110 a day. And that's even, they could be given, that would be far less or nothing. The purse account's already way overpaid, and they're kind of just letting that drag. And then also they agreed to defer the recapture payments, and recapture is this ridiculous and arcane Illinois law that was instituted in 1995 when full card simulcasting came in. It compensates tracks even now, 25 years later, for the shift of betting from live on track to out of state. Obviously, the tracks make a little more money on bets made at the track on their product. So the track operator said, "Sure, you can have out of state full card simulcast, but you have to pay us back out of the purse account based on this formula that was created." So it really, literally millions of dollars flow out of the purse accounts in Illinois to track operators every year. But Hawthorne, because of the circumstances of being in financial trouble with the purse account now, and because they're going to be getting at Cassina. They figured that can reconcile all the purse differentials. They agreed with the Illinois Thoroughbred Horses Association to defer capture, or they would be paying, God only knows how low it would be. But there is hope for the future. It's dirt racing again after the Polytrack meet at Arlington, kind of a change. Weather's been decent, not too much rain, so the turf course should be in pretty good shape. And they got an influx of new horsemen, some for the better, some for the worse, people might say. Broberg is there for the. He's got a major presence. Never had that in Chicago before. That's going to change the dynamic. Some Canterbury people who might have gone to Turf Paradise with the difficult Arizona situation there. They're at Hawthorne now, so I think entries are going to be okay despite the relative paucity of purse funds. Hmm.
No, that is that. That is. I saw the Broberg news. I also saw, I guess we should mention it, because it it received the appropriate response from the public. Marcus Vitale was given stalls?
A handful, yeah. A dozen or something. I mean, presumably this is something that would pass muster with the Illinois Racing Board, and it would be up to the tracks themselves to determine if they wanted to grant that operation stall space. I've never covered the man or his operation. I've read certainly plenty of the reports, and I know that there are, it's not like a mystery that whether things have gone amiss with that stable or not in terms of medication violations and other issues. I don't really see the purpose of it. You know, it's not like it's going to be a major change in the way their business runs. I think the juice isn't worth the squeeze if I were in charge, but I'm obviously not in charge.
Well, you would think that he will. You'd like to think he would be on his best behavior, given the misadventures that he's been connected with.
But I mean, I like Hawthorne. I mean, the track itself isn't. It's not in a beautiful area. It's heavily industrialized. It's a kind of an older. I mean, they're undergoing construction right now. They're not like raising the place and making a new building, but they're doing a huge construction project to retrofit the existing facility for the casino. But the track itself, I mean, I like racing there. It's one of the longest home stretches in North America.
Yes,
you know, you get plenty of time. I love a decent sized stretch. I hate these short stretch tracks where the race is decided on the turn so much, and horses don't enjoy running on turns generally as much as they do in the straight, and you got a quarter mile home stretch, you know, gives horses a fair shot. The turf races there are interesting, and they used to have huge fields in the fall winter meet. It was a very appealing gambling meet, I thought, and there may be enough horses, at least initially, and they're only running 3 days a week, cutting down to two later, that the field size might stay adequate for people to give it a look as far as their gambling opportunity.
Well, and of course, they run a very strong contest program as well at Hawthorne that a lot of guys and players look forward to. So we wish them well, and we'll keep an eye on the Hawthorne season. And turn our attention, Marcus, to the international scene before we talk about Keeneland and Preakness. Some thoughts about tomorrow and the Ark and the weather there. Not
or Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Yeah. No, the turf, you know, they have this crazy thing in overseas where they actually do specific ground measurements, and so people who are betting on the races know exactly what the course conditions are. No, it's crazy. I mean, that could never happen here. No, the ground penetrometers were showing 4.1, so that means that the course is already tilted over from very soft to heavy, and there could easily be more rain before Sunday's races. The last I read, Sunday was supposed to be like the better day as far as not raining. But it's interesting in a way because it's such a complicating dynamic, but also I think, really unfortunate. And the big misfortune occurred during the final declaration phase when Love, the brilliant Aiden O'Brien trained filly who swept the Guineas and the Oaks and then won the Yorkshire Oaks impressively in her prep. She was withdrawn. No, she wasn't even, I mean, she was withdrawn from because she'd been initially entered, but she wasn't part of the final entries because they saw they didn't want any part of that that turf course. The good news for us Americans is that Aiden O'Brien specifically said Breeders' Cup turf would be on her agenda, which is exciting news. I'm not sure that she'll get like fast ground at Keeneland. That's rarely the case in the fall there, but certainly it's unlikely to be anything like what they're experiencing in Paris this weekend. But obviously front and center in the arc has enabled Cheeks to become the first three-time winner. This is her second try at achieving that milestone. She was obviously defeated last year by Waldgeist over a very soft course. The general consensus seems to be that the going is going to be considerably deeper this year even than last year. Enable has shown that she can get over like pretty much any course. She has so much class and ability, and she is a powerful mare. I don't think that she's going to just like spit the bit and finish at the back of the pack, but certainly it's not the conditions that her protections would want or that she would especially relish. I mean, if she's able to win, it's because she slogs it out and just manages to cope with the ground. Certainly it won't benefit her at all. I think that a major part of her defeat last year was that she just got seen out slightly at the end, going a mile and a half over very soft by a horse who handled it better. And I don't see another Waldgeist in this race because that was a really good horse, and I don't think there's anybody who might love the ground who's as good as he was. But also with even more extreme conditions, you know, it throws a further level of chaos over the proceedings.
Some thoughts on who, you know, on who might obviously benefit?
Well, I mean, I think I was in the contingent until recently thinking that Stradivarius had no chance in the race because he just couldn't quicken enough going a mile and a half. But to me, it's he more than anybody who benefits from the situation. He is a tough outside draw in 14, but that's not a deal breaker, and I think that tends to get overplayed just as a matter of course. Although it is not, it's not a positive. He's got a somewhat elderly jockey named Olivier Tellier riding him, but you do get the long priced uncoupled same trainer entry boost that we so often see to be effective since it's an able stablemate trained by John Gostin. This horse and his two races over particularly wet turf was exceptional. And the irony is that before his most recent attempt, there was widespread concern that he was not a soft ground horse at all. But apparently, he loves it. The other horse that really comes to mind in that regard is this horse named Ian Swoop, who's raced in Germany a lot. He definitely likes soft ground. He was second last with a somewhat troubled trip in the pre-foil on the Arc Trials day. And he's a progressive three-year-old, gets 6 pounds from the older horses and a couple pounds from Enable, the older mare. He's getting some action. He's down to like 12-1 or so in the Antipost wagering. And he's one I would consider. I also just a tiny bit inclined to give this three-year-old filly, Rabia, who I thought disappointed last time in our trial day, who I had high hopes for. She has minimal experience on testing conditions, but she's a fleet, light-footed horse who could, I mean, she might be able to quicken more than some, but I think a lot of these horses are just really going to dislike things like Serpentine. Oh, one other horse. Persian King has a real question about how far he can run, but one of his best races ever was the French 2000 Guineas last year, which was run over a heavy course. He ran very well in that. He did catch heavy ground earlier this year in a straight mile, where he was soundly defeated by the excellent three-year-old Palace Pier, but that might not have been a fully representative race. He's reportedly rounded into better form since then, trained by Andre Fabre, who is a master of training ARC winners, he might have a bit of a day. He's 25-1 right now, so the price would be right for him.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Rabbi Ha. Dick Powell sent me a note this morning because we touched on it with Dick yesterday, and you know, Dick was going to monitor the situation. He also thinks that she's got a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the last race was a means to an end, but even in a prep, you kind of want to see a certain baseline level of confidence, and she didn't quite get there for me because I did have high expectations for her even in the trial race. But I think that, I mean, she's lightly raced enough that she's got more latitude for improvement on the day than most horses in this race.
The Arc de Triomphe, and plenty of coverage all over the North American market and feeds, and always interesting. We'll see. It's hard, you know, hard not to root a little for Enable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Too compelling.
I mean, spectacular. What a career. What a horse. And, I mean, yeah, they're throwing an extra layer of challenge at her, but definitely an easy horse to root for. Totally agree with you there.
Before we talk domestic issues, Marcus, I'll ask the question again. I've been asking you and Dick, and anytime we've got somebody with access on the Breeders' Cup, you know, pulse line. Any further feel for the international participation? You were very enlightening last week when we talked. When you mentioned the sportsman exemption,
I'm glad you. Oh, there's another word to that phrase, the elite sportsman's exemption. I realized that...
you got to be elite.
Neglected that. Correct. And I'm glad I was enlightening on that front, because I will be no more enlightening now than I was then, because I know nothing more. All I know is that, like I mentioned before, like even today and yesterday, the overseas trainers are talking about Breeders' Cup, and so they're going to be able to participate. Like, I feel like if Aidan O'Brien thought that he might not be able to send his horses, he wouldn't be specifically referring to, like, running Love in the Breeders' Cup first. So, I mean, that may be a false assumption, but it seems like that's the assumption under which they're operating.
Very good. All right. Well, we should, you would think, with another week or so, and when we get, the champions, when's the champions card? The Kip
Card. There was an extra week between it and the ARC, I think, this year. I think it might be 3 weeks, but don't quote me on that.
Okay. So maybe the 20, is it as late as the 24th?
Actually, I think what it is, there are 3 weeks between Champions Day and Breeders' Cup this year.
So
that
17th.
Would make it a week earlier.
Okay. Okay.
I mean,
17th, then.
If only there were some way to look things up. Something digitally this week. Anyway, keep talking and I'll tell you.
All right. We'll turn our attention to
October 17th.
It is the 17th. Very good. All right. Yeah. That's always a fun morning as well. We'll turn our attention to domestic issues. And as Marcus told us last week, the lead coverage of Keeneland for the Daily Racing Form. And we get started today, and certainly gets off to a rousing start, Marcus.
You think so?
Yeah, I like the card. I'm looking at the late pick five.
I mean, I thought there were too many short fields and too many favorites that looked imposing to me, especially early. I guess later, yeah. I like the Alcibiades. The stakes are good. I can definitely see that. Go ahead.
Dive into the stakes, because I had Scully earlier, and I really struggled with this Alcibiades. I found it very confusing.
Yeah, I think it's confusing too, but I actually kind of like horses. I like them better than their figures, their buyer figures, which are not exceptional by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, we're talking Top Fig and Race is simply ravishing with an 81 beating three horses, but I think she might be pretty good. She's got a little bit of an off-brand pedigree, and if you go down into her female family, you kind of wonder about how far she'd run, but she's already won a two-turn turf race, and she's very advanced physically from what I can see on video. I think she's I think she ought to stay decently. I think she's pretty good. Might as well just go backward from the outside. Got Murphy for Hardy, who ran at Arlington. I think her buyer was better than her figures on some other systems, but, I mean, and I don't think she beat very much. They did go a fast pace in front of her, but she, it's not like anybody else in the race made up the ground she did. She has a very, very long stride, and I thought turned in an extremely encouraging final 3 furlongs in that race for a barn that almost never wins first time out, and obviously has the pedigree to stretch out. Trained on dirt in Florida a lot before she came to Arlington, to Hardy's barn, and has a very dirty pedigree, if you ask me, a Bernardini out of a Tis Now mare. I think I ended up picking her on top because I think she's going to be a pretty good price, but she could run seventh, and that wouldn't shock me either. I don't think Extrema has a good chance. Crazy Beautiful, I think, is a very good horse. It was her last race was weird. She did get in a ton of trouble, the weird part for me was I really liked the way she finished, and I thought she was stretching out nicely, but she was losing ground, you know, from the eighth pole home to Girl Daddy. She did gallop out in front, and Girl Daddy obviously got a huge jump on her when Crazy Beautiful was hung up behind horses. She has 2 other good races behind her. She was headstrong in her debut at Ellis early, going 2 turns, but I think that she's probably a more settled horse than that. I think that if I had to guess, I'd say McPeak would view her as the top candidate amongst 3, but that's just a guess. He didn't say that when I talked to him. Even his 3rd string, Olivia of the Desert, she doesn't have much in the way of figures, especially from her 2-turn dirt win, but visually that was a very impressive race. I think she was superior to the raw number there because she won so easily and was always traveling strongly in the bridle. And Travel Column, obviously going to be part of the pace unless she doesn't break well because she was very sharp sprinting first half. She does have the route-leaning pedigree, but she clearly is a filly with a lot of speed drawn inside and will have to use it. She could be really good, you know. She could easily stay and just be a superior horse. And thoughtfully beat very little in the Adirondack. I don't think there's much question about that, but she did it nicely. Another horse who is bred to stretch out, and expert 2-year-old trainer, solid work patterns. I mean, it's a confusing race, but I think there is a lot of promise here, too. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens.
Agreed. And I don't got to build my tickets yet. And when I get off the air, I'll put up the final thoughts. What did you do in the Phoenix?
Yeah, well, I have a stronger opinion there because I quite like No Parole in this race. I think that he's going to shake loose. I think despite having run 7 furlongs, that was a function of getting him into the races they wanted to run. And I think he's a 3/4 horse who just wants to roll and go as fast as he can. And I think he can sustain his speed. I really like, his bad race at Saratoga last time, which he was well below form and never looked right to me. And I ended up picking him in that race, but I wasn't totally sold on his final work either. He didn't look quite like himself, but I think that he's probably back to that now. I really like the freshening that he's gotten. So you get the bad race that bumps up his price a couple ticks, and you get a fresh sprinter cutting back to what I think is going to be his best distance in a race where there are some good horses that also helps your price. I mean, this Diamond Oops is excellent. I think he might be even best at sprinting, even though he can turf sprint and go a mile on dirt, too. But I'm standing with No Parole in this race.
Interesting. I won't say I assumed, because I was willing to believe that one of the speeds, you know, might survive here. But, between No Parole and I think Wes Hawley's absolutely Aiden is in career best form.
Yeah, I don't think he can stay with No Parole. That's just my guess.
How about the presence of Wesley with Coppertown, and you've got Edgemont Road. Don't know how much speed you're going to get from Midnight Sands, but you would think Rosario's, got to keep him close. I mean, it just feels like there's kind of waves of pressure.
Yeah, maybe. I like races like that with a speed horse, because then if you're right, a horse is the speed of the speed and runs those horses off their feet, get a nice breather, from the 3/8 pole to the 1/4 pole, and I mean, sure, if Whitmore runs me down, I'm going to tip my hat to him because Whitmore is an excellent old horse. But I'm willing. I think I'm going to get the right price on No Parole too, if it works out in my favor.
You very well will, I think. And among the three-year-olds, because this is a race the three-year-olds have won, and
yep.
Echo Town, I thought, figured right behind the speed to get an absolutely ideal trip. And, you know, he's also, you know, coming back to what he likes to do best.
Yeah, I think the mile was probably starting a little. He's been on the go for a long time now. No Parole handled him pretty comfortably at Belmont. Granted, he got loose in a race there where there was maybe less speed than here. But, he could run well, but I just don't think that horse-to-horse on their best day is as fast on three-quarters as this Louisiana bred.
Well, you bring up the Louisiana bred, and because I know he's tuning in, I'm going to bring up the Ohio bred. Mo don't know, and Ron Paolucci going to run out of his barn because he's over at the Spectrum, but he's got to van it over. But Mo don't know has run some races that are competitive here, and he's not far off this crowd. So good luck to.
One horse, 33 for 44, third or better. That's, I know, granted, a lot of those have been in Ohio bred competition, but that's a racehorse. There's no question about it.
He's maintained form year after year, he's cutting back, too. He's coming off the Charlestown Classic. You can't run a Charlestown Classic without a Luch participant. I think that's a
sometimes
rule.
Sometimes it feels you can't run any of these races without a
rim shot, nice. A very good way to start the action, and the weather looks okay at Keeneland as well.
Oh yeah.
Let's turn to tomorrow, Marcus, and kind of hit the highlights and the three grade ones, of course, finishing up with the Shadwell, and you've got quite a bit of maiden action and some nice pedigrees on parade. Your thoughts about the Saturday card?
I like the Saturday card quite a bit. The Shadwell, I'm hesitating because my past performance has switched. I had two Fridays and no Saturdays all of a sudden.
I know that feeling.
The Shadwell is very Chad Brown heavy. Rate the Chad Browns for me.
Flavius. I'll go.
Nice.
I'll go Flavius. Analyze it. Raging Bull without parole.
Huh. I like it. Yeah. Flavius. Yeah, I would do it. Analyze it, Flavius, Raging Bull without parole.
There you go.
I think that Analyze It is going to get pretty heavily bet here.
Yes.
And be much lower than 9-2. But I still picked him on top because I think that this horse could be really, really good for the rest of this. Supposedly it was foot problems that led to his long absence. I did think it was worth noting that he was breezing regularly last summer and looked like he was ready to run when they had to stop on him again. That may or may not mean anything, but I think that's important that he did have that level of activity rather than just the huge gap. I think it's meaningful in the long term as far as his prospects for keeping together. Just watching him at Monmouth last time, he has, he went from a boy to a man, basically, and he's a powerhouse. This horse has a lot of speed. They did the right thing in terms of going for the best races by running him a mile and an eighth to a mile and a quarter at three, because that's where the big purses, the big races were. But this horse to me has always been a miler, and the fact that he was able to run that well is stretching beyond his best, and also rating pretty nicely too, because he has a lot of speed. I think that it's just And to do what he did in the Breeders' Cup, when I think he had already had a long, hard campaign and looked like he might be over the top in the Shadwell, he was caught wide in that race. Was not the best Breeders' Cup mile by any stretch of the imagination, but the horses, the winner came up outside him on a course that strongly favored outside paths that day. I think that's a sign of his potential. His baseline to me is high, and I think as good as he looked at Mama's Beating, a considerably lesser field, I think he's going to take a nice step forward. And one thing that's really nice about a horse like Analyze is he can adapt to the different pace scenarios that are possible here. I think it's pretty clear at this point that Halliday is a horse who wants to go a little bit faster. Like, if you let him roll and set the pace he wants to set, he's going to run better. He will rate. They've taught him how to come back to the ride. But that takes away what he does best. So he's coming out running. There's no question in my mind for post two. And then you've got to figure out how much pressure he's going to get from the two outside horses, Ivar and Spectacular Gem. I don't think, first of all, I mean, all due respect to Kentucky Downs, I'm not treating those fractions as anything close to actual times from that tourist mile. The times that they were, and hopefully this will get resolved, you know, in the future, but I'm not putting any credence in that, which makes, like, seeing how much speed that horse has a little tricky. I don't think he's that fast. I don't think that he's going to be able to keep up with Halliday. But I do know Spectacular Gem is a horse. So if you look, he's 4-1, 4 first and a second from 6 starts in a mile. He's going back to what he does best, and what he's done most successfully going a mile is going to the front, and he's got post 10. I think he's the horse who's going to come up and race on the flank of Halliday. That means Analyze it could sit, you know, really good grip, maybe in pocket with Ivar outside him. But what I was getting to was that if that doesn't happen, then Analyze it has enough pace that he can keep Halliday in range too and still finish off of that. So I like that tactical versatility. Flavius to me is a big mystery. Like, I really like the way he ran last time. And Snapper Sinclair is a different horse at Kentucky Downs than anywhere else. So saying that, oh, he just beat Snapper Sinclair, I don't think that means anything, because Snapper Sinclair is far better going a mile at Kentucky Downs than in any other circumstance in the racing world, as far as I can see. Also, you know, this horse, you could see the flashes in his races over the winter, too. He showed really nice acceleration, but just couldn't put it all together, you know, just wasn't quite there. He's only run 7 times. I could see him having another level pit still. So, yeah, I mean, is that who you would pick to win, or is that just your favorite Chad Brown horse?
I'm not sure yet, maybe Flavius was on my mind because I will throw out a little pedigree note. His 2-year-old sister debuts tomorrow at Belmont in the second Oyster Box.
Oh, nice. I did not know
so,
that.
Flavius was top of mind. What's interesting is that Gainsway ended up with her. And I'm anxious to hear this story exactly. What transpired here? Because, of course, she's out of the wonderful Star Former, and I'm kind of curious what, how Gainsway acquired.
Yeah, that's very curious. Yeah, that's
right.
That's very strange.
Judmont giving up a Tappet filly out of Star Former. You keep the fillies and sell the colts unless they're arrogate.
Maybe it was just a gift.
Who knows? Yeah, I'll check with Anthony Beck on that. I don't know yet. Casa Creed.
I wanted to mention Casa Creed. I ended up taking a second. I had it analyzed at Casa Creed Halliday because Keeneland is a weird course. I mean, some horses don't like it much at all, and some horses really thrive over it. This horse has never run on it. I'm thinking he's a horse that might do well in this course. And also, that last race was really good. I mean, I'm surprised. What was he even doing in that race? he had just run third in an allowance race and seventh in the wide stand. Why did Mott think that he should run in the grade one four-star Dave? And to me, he's just really turned a corner and is doing, he's a different horse. He's only four, and he had, you know, he had some good races earlier. And then he validated it because he had easily the fastest final quarter in the four-star day. He was really rolling late. And if he could just stick, he lost position kind of at a key time between the half and the 3/8. And if he could just stick a little bit closer on the rail, he could get it, and gets lucky, he can get a really nice trip. He'll definitely be a price. He'll be at least 12-1, I would think. So, yeah, worth mentioning.
The only reason that the season unfolded the way it did, their target over the winter had been the Makers. And when everything went awry, it sort of threw them off. Then they, you know, there was a couple of other moving targets. And so finally, you know, when things were getting going by, you know, the end of April and May, they sort of refocused in and they said, well, all right, Wise Dan, and we'll go from there. But a grade one at Keeneland had been, you know, on the bulletin board for Lee and for Bill Mott. So, this is a refocused opportunity, and they had every intention of being ready for the Makers. So,
yeah, okay,
yeah, it's a good group. It's a great way to, you know, finish at least the stakes sequence. There is a second level allowance that wraps up the card. Talk about the breeders, and I with Scully earlier, Marcus, I didn't have a lot to offer. I haven't really looked at this field closely. I got to watch some replays. There's some unknown quantities to me in here.
Yeah, I looked at it pretty closely yesterday. I don't know how much is in this race really. I went with the low buyer horse, King Fury, on top because I thought he was so impressive first out. And off a slow pace, he was never going to get much of a final time. I mean, they went 48-3 to the half. McPeak just stuck him straight into the route race. And he was right. The horse was mentally prepared to do that. I love the combination of Curl and then Terrace. And obviously on a horse with a lot of stamina, who he's going to have a little bit of speed over time too. I think he might be really good. Is he absolutely ready to win this? And from post nine, I'm not totally convinced. What's his price going to be? Maybe less than 12-1. I'm not exactly sure yet. I think it's a tricky race to forecast odds. So, I mean, who are the other major players? I mean, it's hard to even say. It's really hard to even say. Calibrate was very impressive, I thought, at Saratoga. I mean, he took all. He had horses stacked outside of him the whole time, and he just handled it, you know, switched leads professionally, drew off. I love the Dyna former mare, and he bred to run on, great work pattern since keeping him up at Saratoga. He's got to be he kind of should be the Tebbit favorite in my mind. I don't know if he would be. I preferred his race over Founder by a little bit, although Founder did run well and beat a decent-looking horse and highly motivated, part of the upstart platoon of runners from this kind of explosive first crop. And Essential Quality is a horse I think that merits a lot of consideration,
sure,
too. He did it very nicely first time out, overcoming plenty of trouble. It had to do a lot of things in his debut for a first-time starter, and it's bred to run on some, too. I think he's going to step forward. If he's 2-1, I would have no interest in playing him to win. That'd be too short for me in this race. Upstriker, who knows? I mean, that horse showed a ton of speed at Ellis. I thought just watching him go through the lane, like I wasn't as, even though he has a route pedigree, I wasn't as convinced that he was going to stretch out right away as I might have been with a horse like Calibrate. But I like King Fury. I don't love him. Similar to the 2-year-old Philly Grade One on Friday. This race to me has more interest as like who are these horses? What are they going to be going forward as? I love a horse to bet in this race.
The Breeders' Futurity. Somebody's going to be a Grade One winner out of this. That's the reality.
I don't think that's how they're going to advertise the race, Steve.
The race I want to watch, I mentioned this earlier, is that Ellis maiden breaker of Upstriker, the other upstart in here. And Moquette isn't necessarily somebody that cranks him up. And so for Upstriker
to win,
right? So for that one to win, and it's 6.5, which is a not 6.5, 7, you win first out. That's typically a sign of quality. I'm interested in out of a Smart Strike mare, so there's plenty of reason to like the two turns. There's something about the, what's the price on Upstriker?
Yep.
8 to 1. That might be me.
Sounds about right as far as the price goes, I would
think. Yeah, that feels good. Let's talk about the First Lady, and it's miraculous that even for a Grade One for $350, considering how many filly and mare miles there's been and there are going on left and right, including at Pimlico, there. I don't know if there was enough frosting to spread across the whole cake, but what do we make of this group?
Well, small but select, I guess, is fair.
There we go. Elite. There's that word again.
Yeah. I mean, this is a tough one, man. I picked Uni against all of my instincts because I think she's going to be, I don't know if she's going to be shorter than Beau Recall. I have to see. I think she might be done, and she might be, but her first race back, she definitely looked quite heavy to me, and considering the pace, she ran okay. She wasn't as good as she was last year, but I thought she ran okay. It was the four-star Dave. This horse loves really fast ground, and that's not really, I mean, I don't know. They called the course good. Was there too much cut in it? She just never really got involved. Is that because she's six and she just didn't come back this year? If she's third choice and, you know, 5-2, 3-1, I'm willing to say no, she's still got it. I mean, she seems to be working fine. And she ran so well over this course, albeit with a very fast pace in front of her last time. Beau Recall just ran like the best race of her life. It's not on buyer figures, but maybe it wasn't as good as when she beat God Stormy in the 2019 Distaff Turf Mile. But she ran, I mean, I think she really loves Churchill. I think she excels in that course. I don't know. I'm not saying she can't run close to her best elsewhere, but off maybe her best course and off one of the best races of her life at age six back in a month, I mean, she could run just as well, but I think it's more likely she doesn't run quite as well. And I'm really, the newspaper of record race last time really troubled me. I wonder if she just, like, the two turns blows her mind or something. Because her Belmont races around one turn, where she got back on track this year, were excellent. And she never looked comfortable last time. And just, she didn't run horrible, but she just got swallowed up without any resistance. So she's in another two-turn race here. She's going to be controlling speed. But if she won't switch off and she can't get her head right, it's not going to matter. But I think she's the one that's going to be, they're going to forgive that last race and bet her heavily again as lone speed. And maybe that'll hold up. But if she does what she did last time in the two-turn race, she's going to lose again.
Yeah,
that's all I got, man. Delica is an outside hope. I mean, that was a very, like, a heavily restricted race, and she won decently over a particular course. She has recently stretched back out to two turns after having some success sprinting. I suppose that if you really wanted to be a super contrarian and pitch all three of the favorites, which isn't totally implausible, you could make a case for her or even Daddy as a legend, who was abysmal on soft turf in her first start back from a very long layoff and for a new trainer, and then improved considerably last time and has, based on her past form, she's a cut below the best horses in this race. But if you think they're going to run a cut below their best and she's ready to get back to that, then she's another possibility as, you know, as a much longer price than the top three.
Those are the grade ones, and leading into that troika, we've got the Woodford and the TCA, and I did see that you made Fastboat the day's best bet.
Yeah, the TCA is really poor. I'm sorry. I can't get, I mean, that's like a second-level allowance race to me. Woodford is a shorter field than typical. Fastboat, I really like. Because I think they just decided that they were going to use the fresh is better approach. He ran so huge in his June Churchill race, first start since February, and he was heavily campaigned last year. He handles Keeneland. He was just, you know, he was third at Ellis in a stake last summer, second Houston, third in the Colonel Power. He's on the cusp of being good enough, but I think that the freshness factor could be everything. Also, I mean, he found another level this summer, which he had hinted at in the past. I think that his work pattern is suggestive of a horse who's really thriving right now, and I think his price is going to be right. I think he can stay close enough, and with a shorter field, he's not going to have to, even if he gets in like the third tier and is behind and inside. There aren't that many rivals to navigate. There are a lot of possibilities here. I'm not going to lie. I have high hopes for this horse at the right price, but Leinster is a very good horse. I have complete respect for him. Just Might could be the controlling speed. I think he's got a chance at a price, and Extravagant Kid is almost always there or thereabouts. He did run really big last time and lost. Sometimes that can, and he's coming back in a month. He's had already, I don't know. I know his ceiling more than I know what Fastboat could hit on the day at a bigger price. I mean, I think Leinster is definitely the horse to beat. And I guess I should mention Chaos Theory, who won very well off a claim last time, but is shipping now and is again in against, I think, considerably stronger rivals than he just beat.
Marcus, the spinster as well on Sunday, and the rollicking Fall Stars weekend, part of a crazy Saturday between...
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, Belmont and Preakness Saturday. Let's get some Preakness opinions from you before we go.
Oh, the Preakness. I have not had to make a selection for this race, and I only... really looked at it last night. But I believe, I mean, I'm going to give Max Player a long look. He was a little bit of a wise guy horse in the Derby, and heck, he got just too far back, more than anything. I think he could stay a little closer. Second time for this barn, who was just getting to know him. He had the rail last time, too, which is not really good. And he's got some upside to him. I mean, he wouldn't have to take a gigantic leap to be effective. And I could see a pretty strong pace percolating here and giving the closing types a little bit of a shot.
Interesting. All right. I'm shocked that you weren't part of the opinion makers for Preakness.
I'm buried at Keeneland.
That's true. That's true. And I guess is Nicole's going to be on site?
Nicole Russo will be ably manning, heading the coverage team in Lexington.
We obviously utilized Nicole for the bloodstock work, but as we get closer to Breeders' Cup, she always has got a couple of divisions to do the advances on and tracks and does a great job. Typically, the turf, one of the turf juveniles, right? She
Wow, I don't even know. I mean, she covered the Kentucky Oaks, so she's, I mean,
yep.
she's functioning
terrific
at the top of the game, and she did a great job at that. She knows all the participants. She knows a lot about horses, and no one
very
is
good
going to outwork Nicole.
No, she is. She's just terrific at whatever assignment.
Absolutely.
We force feeding DRF Russo on everybody because whatever you throw at her, she just runs. You know, she's like a marlin with a and there's agreement from what's the dog's name?
That was Fran. That was Francis. He heard a grasshopper rustling 2.5 miles away.
How many dogs are there in the Hirsch household?
We've reduced the pack this summer. We've had some age attrition. We're down to 3.
Wow.
Yeah, there were 5 in August and 3 now.
Holy cow! Yeah. That's a brood. That's unbelievable. I didn't realize you were. Well, you're not famous for the household photos and the warm and fuzzy social media postings.
I am, actually. You just don't know about that side of me.
Where's it hiding? Where's the dog pictures then?
You're just going to have to go back and find it, Steve. I'm not going to give you that kind of help.
Marcus,
I occasionally post a photo of like the 6 cats lined up eating at the same time.
Ooh, that's a rarity. We have 4, so I know how tough that is.
Yeah, it's tough, all right. It makes you wonder, like, what you were thinking, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, Tina says no more. It's over. It's over after that.
Uh-huh.
But she'll.
Yeah.
I've been able to sort of foist a couple on her over the years. They just kind of come back to Saratoga. You know, you have somebody shoved a kitten in your hand and say, okay.
I know. All of ours are from the street or from the pound. I mean, we have not gone out of our way in most cases to acquire animals. But, I mean, it's a lot of work, but we enjoy their company in the end.
Yeah, and we enjoy yours. Previewing the action, Keeneland and Moore and Longchamp as well tomorrow morning or Sunday morning. And Marcus, thanks so much. We'll be
my pleasure.
Looking forward to do some recap next week. And
all right, have a great weekend, and everybody have
too
a great weekend. If you're a racing fan, kind of where it's at.
Yeah, big time. DRF Hirsch, everybody, let's take a break. Our last of the morning. We got to come back. We got to rifle through Nick Tamaro, Rick Hammerly, Dave Grenig. And if you didn't see the retweet I just put out, Dave Grenig, tis the law over the Belmont main track. A 5/8 work, 57-4. 57-4. Essentially, he is channeling his, with that work, he's channeling the inner funny side before the Belmont. Holy cow. 57-4. We'll get details from Dave coming up in about 30 minutes. Right now, Nick Tamaro will do the Belmont action. I should tell you, a reminder, Belmont Pimlico Challenge. Sign up by 5 o'clock. Naira Betts. The cross country. We're going to do it with Nick. The Joe Hirsch, the First Lady, the Belmont Derby, the Breeders' Futurity, and the Shadwell. That's your cross country tomorrow. Back after this, Hour 3 continues at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program.